Today is Wednesday, April 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. The importance of mental health as the world fights the coronavirus pandemic.
Everything that we're going through and the wounds that are going to be inflicted by this pandemic are going to be outlasting what our physical scars will be.
Plus, Russia and Saudi Arabia plan to meet Thursday.
While they continue a price war that has driven down U.S. gasoline and oil prices.
And how one tech app is helping in the fight against COVID-19. Those stories and more are next. The first train out of Wuhan, China departed Wednesday, ending 2 months of travel restrictions and a shutdown that forced the city's residents to stay indoors. Reuters' Gloria So starts us off.
The first train departing Wuhan in 2 months set off on Wednesday, the day the city was no longer sealed off from the rest of the world. Tens of thousands of people are expected to leave by air, rail, and road. 38-year-old Liu Jia is one of many who have been eagerly waiting for this moment when they can finally reunite with their loved ones.
I planned to go home during the Chinese New Year, but because of the epidemic, I didn't get to do so. My family asks me every day, when can I come home?
The long lines of passengers at Wuhan's Hankou Station and free-flowing traffic of cars on the city's highways stand in stark contrast to the empty stations and blocked-off roads from just a month ago. But the lifting of travel restrictions doesn't mean the city is in the clear. 34-year-old Wang Lei works at a toll station in Wuhan.
There are definitely more cars now, but still less compared to before the virus. Now we're seeing traffic slowly recovering.
Many locals are still wearing masks and even hazmat suits for protection. And health officials are closely checking travelers' temperatures, especially as China faces a second wave of cases, primarily imported from overseas. However, that isn't stopping the majority of Wuhan's population from celebrating this milestone. Yang Jing was one of the staffers on the first train leaving the city.
Since I got off work on January 23rd, I've kept waiting for notification at home, until I got the notice yesterday asking me to go with the first train departing from Hankou Station today. It feels like normal.
That was Reuters reporter Gloria So. A British official said that Prime Minister Boris Johnson was in stable condition Wednesday after he spent another night in the intensive care unit at a London hospital for coronavirus disease treatment. The Prime Minister has been hospitalized since Sunday after his symptoms persisted during a period of self-isolation following his positive coronavirus test. Britain, which has been under lockdown orders for about 2 weeks, has about 56,000 confirmed coronavirus cases with 6,100 deaths. Worldwide, there are about 1.4 million cases, according to a Johns Hopkins University tally. The White House is projecting close to 82,000 COVID-19 deaths in the United States by early August, a slightly less grim figure than earlier outbreak models indicated. Experts say that government transparency is essential in communicating with the public during this health crisis, but warn that pandemic modeling is never precise. White House correspondent Patsy Wita-Kuswara has more.
A harrowing sight in New York City. Medical workers transporting bodies to refrigerated trucks repurposed as temporary morgues as COVID-19 deaths climb up.
This will be probably the toughest week between this week and next week. And there'll be a lot of death, unfortunately.
Assuming the country implements full social distancing until end of May, the White House Coronavirus Task Force projects close to 82,000 COVID-19 deaths by early August. The model predicts the U.S. may need fewer hospital beds, ventilators, and other equipment than previously projected. However, health experts warn against early optimism and say it's best to prepare for worst-case scenarios. William Schaffner is an infectious disease expert at the Vanderbilt University School of Medicine.
That serious talk helps all of us, both professionally and personally, to think seriously about this issue. It helps us prepare psychologically for what's ahead.
For their coronavirus modeling, the White House reached out to a number of universities, including the University of Texas at Austin. Lauren Myers, head of the university's research team, underscores that pandemic modeling is almost never precise and that these projections are not like weather forecasts.
When you forecast a tropical storm, There's nothing you can do about changing the path of the storm. There are things you can do to protect yourself, but you can't change the course of the storm. When you project that an infectious disease outbreak could lead to a crisis in healthcare or lead to many, many deaths, there are actually measures you can take, things you can do, especially if you act early enough.
Projections rely on good data, and not all countries have the tracking capacity nor the political will to report cases accurately and transparently.
I think that lying about numbers, suppressing science, suppressing doctors, censoring the media, this is the absolute wrong time to be doing that,
said Daniel Rundy, an international development analyst at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. South Korea was one of the worst hit countries in the early stages of the pandemic, but has been praised for its effective aggressive response that includes a swift implementation of mass-scale testing and consistent, transparent messaging to the public throughout the crisis. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
A mobile alert created in South Africa is taking the lead in putting information about the coronavirus into the hands of millions. PrayKelt.org has gone global, raising awareness about COVID-19, and VOA's Salim Solomon has that story.
A WhatsApp bot developed by a South African organization is helping millions of people around the world get the latest information about the coronavirus. At the time the virus broke out, PrayKelt.org had already created digital tools to help people in the developing world improve their health and well-being. One of their most successful was called Mom Connect, a mobile phone service giving expectant mothers vital information about pregnancy milestones and linking them to services. Gustav PrayKelt, the founder of PrayKelt.org, saw a similar need for information relating to coronavirus. The South African government had set up hotlines, but they were unable to handle the massive volume of calls, and misinformation was spreading quickly.
We were worried that our users wouldn't have access to a trusted source of information. So people, you know, hear rumors and they hear stories, and people get panicky and worried about what they should do to keep themselves healthy, especially as all the lockdowns started happening.
PrayKelt created COVID-19 Health Alert, offering a WhatsApp-based helpline, real-time data, and automated responses to common questions in numerous languages.
Looking for the latest coronavirus updates? Stop searching or panicking and start chatting. Just add 0600-123-456 to your contacts and start a conversation on WhatsApp with the word hi. Here you can get the latest news and tips.
Within the first 10 days, the bot had 3.5 million users, and PrayKelt partnered with the World Health Organization to create a similar bot to reach a global audience. One of the primary goals is to counter false information about the pandemic.
We're now launching it in many, 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 many languages. And on that bot, you can find out information, but we also publish falsehoods and myths. Because sometimes what happens is you need to actively counteract the falsehoods. You can't just provide the positive information. You also have to say there is information out there that is incorrect. And there are ways that are incorrect how to deal with this pandemic. And we are actively working towards counteracting those falsehoods.
WhatsApp, which is owned by Facebook, is extremely popular in the developing world, where it has largely replaced Facebook and even email as the primary form of digital communication and networking. It has more than 2 billion users worldwide. In an email to VOA, Machi Jidenma, a member of the WhatsApp Partnerships and Business Development team, said, "We think the most important step WhatsApp can take during this crisis is to help connect people directly with public health officials, providing crucial updates about the coronavirus." Jidenma said the company moved quickly to make WHO Health Alert go live in as many countries as possible, including India, Singapore, Israel, Indonesia, South Africa, Nigeria, Argentina, Brazil, and the United Kingdom. "We have worked with the World Health Organization to set up WHO Health Alert and are partnering with national health ministries around the world," she said. "Each of these health alert lines provides education on myths and rumors circulating about coronavirus." PrayKelt said the speed at which the bot has been adapted has been beyond expectations.
It's been an unprecedented success. More than 12 million people now have accessed the WHO line in the last 10 days since we launched. And we've now launched in multiple other languages as well, including Arabic and Spanish and French and more languages to come. And so clearly people are finding the information useful.
Now, it's time to see whether it's having an impact on users' behavior and health.
I think the next step will be to try and understand how people are interpreting that information and whether it's actually helping them to change their behavior.
Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
While the majority of the attention during the COVID-19 pandemic is focused on physical health, San Francisco-based internal medicine physician Dr. Runjun Misra tells VOA mental health is just as important.
Everything that we're going through and the wounds that are going to be inflicted by this pandemic are going to be outlasting what our physical scars will be. And they will, you know, they'll heal a lot sooner than the mental scars for the survivors. I think that's why it's really important to talk about mental health and some of the ways that we can improve our ability to deal with this stress inducing shared life event, because stress actually causes a decrease in our immunity. It releases hormones like cortisol that can ultimately decrease our immunity. And we need our immunity to be completely 100% or as good as we can get it to be so that we're able to deal with coronavirus, not only physically, but also mentally.
So what are some of the ways that people can improve their mental health status to keep their immune systems up and to keep themselves in better spirits to deal with the challenges that may be coming?
So there are a lot of things that we can do. They don't cost anything. So that's nice, because obviously a lot of us are losing our incomes and we're very stressed about that already. So these are some of the things that I think can really help us. One, eat a well-balanced diet. Two, stay well hydrated, get enough water that you're supposed to be getting. Three, exercise daily. And the fourth one, which I think is a little underrated, but everyone is talking about these days, is meditation. Now, I know we can feel very isolated during these times, so it's important to also keep connected with people that we trust, including friends and family. And we can do that virtually through FaceTime or other video and obviously audio devices. And then the one main thing that, you know, I would like to stress on that we don't think about a lot, but we do a lot, is that we're constantly either watching the news or reading the news, or we're on social media and we're just being bombarded, even unconsciously, by updates and news about coronavirus. And honestly, these repeated daily encounters about COVID can really be very exhausting and they can get overwhelming. So it's very important that we limit the amount of time that we spend each day reading about, you know, updates and being exposed to coronavirus news, because if we do this all day, it's going to get out of hand. So it's also important to do something that we enjoy on a daily basis so that we can feel like we have our life under control. And on the same note, important to have some me time, even if it's just 15 or 20 minutes a day, if that means getting up earlier than everyone else in the household so that you can have some time alone to yourself to center yourself and regroup. That's very important. And the main point I want to, you know, send across to our listeners is that if you're doing all these things and you still feel like you're unable to function and you cannot go about your daily activities, then please reach out to your, you know, your doctor, your provider, because there are still ways that we can be connected and help you out. And perhaps if it's necessary, start you on medication so that we can help you before it gets too late. Because I understand that we may be alone during this time, but we don't have to be lonely.
Dr. Runjun Misra is an internal medicine physician practicing in the San Francisco area. And coming up later,
there's a lot of uncertainty about like how our lives look now. And that continues to be true in lots of ways.
You're listening to VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
To enforce social distancing efforts in order to mitigate the spread of COVID-19, local to national governments are compelling their citizens to stay home. Scientists are finding that this reduction in human activity is having some interesting effects on Mother Earth. According to a recent tweet by the Royal Observatory of Belgium, their seismic measurements of ground movements, caused mostly by humans, are much lower since their government implemented containment measures. An article published in the journal Nature suggests scientists at other institutions around the world have made similar findings. Andy Frasetto, a seismologist at the Incorporated Research Institutions for Seismology in Washington, D.C., says if lockdowns continue, city-based detectors around the world might be better than usual at detecting the locations of earthquake aftershocks. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Today's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Russia and Saudi Arabia meet with other countries on Thursday about cutting oil production while they continue a price war that has driven down U.S. gasoline and oil prices. Edward Uranian reports the talks could calm oil prices that have declined in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic.
Russian Energy Minister Alexander Novak told Russian television several days ago that the coronavirus crisis is one of the principal causes of what he called the unprecedented fall of world oil prices. This, he maintained, affects the economic interests of the major world nations, including Russia. In a roundtable discussion broadcast on Russian television, President Vladimir Putin suggested that his aim in the current tug of war with Saudi Arabia and other major producers, including the United States, was to cut world production by around 10 million barrels, give or take. U.S. President Donald Trump has tried to broker a solution between Russia and Saudi Arabia, which have each increased production to try and intimidate the other. Trump said Sunday that he might consider using tariffs to halt the slide of domestic U.S. oil prices.
Tariffs are a way of evening the score. Tariffs are a way of just neutralizing. They have tariffs on us, and we now can put tariffs on them. Am I using it for oil? It's something we can. No. Am I doing it now? No.
Saudi oil analyst Abdulaziz Mikbal told Sky News Arabia that he thought the U.S. will eventually sit down to discuss oil production levels, since the U.S. is one of the principal parties hurt by the ongoing price war. Riyadh will also host a virtual meeting Friday with energy ministers from the group of 20 nations that represent the world's most powerful economies. Khattar Abu Diab teaches political science at the University of Paris. He tells VOA that he thinks both Russia and Saudi Arabia have reached a stalemate in their game of double or nothing, and that each side has come out a loser.
Les Russes voulaient profiter de la moment donné pour augmenter leur production et aller envahir le marché asiatique.
He says neither Russia nor the Saudis want to lose the important Asian oil market. Russia, he thinks, may be trying to hurt U.S. producers as a response to U.S. sanctions prompted by a gas pipeline to Germany. Saudi Arabia, he argues, is trying to defend its interests in a show of force with both Russia and the U.S. after feeling slighted by what the Saudis considered insufficient solidarity when its Aramco oil installations were attacked by Yemen's Houthi rebels in June. Paul Sullivan is a professor at the U.S. National Defense University. Sullivan tells VOA that he thinks shale producers in the U.S. seem to be the target of the current oil price war. It is much more expensive, he argues, to produce an average barrel of shale oil in the U.S. than to produce an average barrel of oil in Saudi Arabia and in most of the better fields in Russia. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
South Korea has been widely praised as a global model for how to contain the coronavirus. Now, it is trying to show the world how to vote during a pandemic. VOA's Bill Gallo reports the country is holding a legislative election next Wednesday.
Dressed in his official blue campaign jacket, South Korean lawmaker Lee Hae-sik is sweeping the sidewalk and picking up trash along with several volunteers. He says his party told him to hold a social distancing approved campaign. So here he is, cleaning the street and disinfecting public surfaces. He says these are his main campaign activities now. South Korea is moving ahead with its legislative election, even during a time of social distancing. Gone are the noisy street rallies that are a hallmark of South Korean elections. Instead, the two-week campaign is more subdued, with candidates focusing much of their efforts online. Voting will look different, too. At polling stations, face masks, plastic gloves, and temperature checks will be required. Anyone showing symptoms will vote at a separate booth. Many coronavirus patients will be voting by mail. Some problems couldn't be fixed. Because of lockdowns overseas, only about half of Korean voters living in foreign countries will be able to vote. But there was never any serious consideration of delaying the election, says candidate Shin Bom-chul. Shin says the conditions may not be very ideal, but they're the same for everyone. So he thinks the vote should proceed. The vote is a midterm test for President Moon Jae-in. Moon's approval ratings have gone up as his government successfully contains the virus. But analyst Jong Han-ul says Moon isn't safe yet because of South Korea's fragile economy. So far, the outbreak has not forced South Korea's economy to shut down, as in other countries. And now, its democracy is also finding a way to move forward, even during a pandemic. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
As the spread of the coronavirus forces more and more Americans to stay home, some are finding it an ideal time to foster or even adopt an animal. VOA's Julie Tabo spoke with a Washington area teacher who recently adopted a dog and now finds himself completely smitten.
Goldie is a lucky dog. She finally got to go home with Tom Drescher and his wife, Becky Nolan.
Yes.
The couple was thinking about adopting a dog, so when the coronavirus came to town and both started working from home, they decided it was an ideal time to make the move.
It made a lot of sense to us to adopt a dog now because we realized that we could give Goldie here the time and the attention and the care that she needed.
The 10 and a half, the terrier pit bull mix, is older than most adoptees and has a few health issues. But that was just fine with Tom and Becky.
We recognized that it was a good opportunity for us with extra time to take in a dog that otherwise might not be adopted. It didn't take long for us to bring her home and kind of fall in love with her. And when they told us that like she might have a couple weeks, she might have a couple years, I hope it's the latter because we really love having her here.
Bobby. In the short time they've known her, the couple has already learned a lot about their canine companion.
Goldie is a little bit of a picky eater. In particular, she loves chicken in all its various forms. She's also, again, despite her age and medical conditions, energetic in terms of wanting to play. When we take her out on walks, she is eager to chase squirrels. She walks at a fairly fast pace.
The couple adopted Goldie from the Humane Rescue Alliance, a leading animal welfare organization in Washington. Ashley Baum is director of adoptions at their two shelters. She says she's seen a rise in fostering since the coronavirus outbreak and hopes more people will adopt as they prepare their shelters for a surge in intake.
We're anticipating that in the coming weeks and months, we're going to see a big increase in intake, whether that's because people are experiencing that financial stress, having to move in with family members or friends or give up their housing, or if they get sick and can't take care of their animal.
Vaughn says while the shelters are doing everything they can to prepare for more animals, she hopes people will use this opportunity to help ease that burden.
I think right now a lot of people are struggling with anxiety, uncertainty, maybe an adjustment in their routine, workload, working from home. There's a lot to be focused on. And adopting an animal or taking an animal into your home as a foster can provide some relief just in the form of having something positive to focus on.
Tom Drescher couldn't agree more.
There's a lot of uncertainty about like how our lives look now. And that continues to be true in lots of ways. If you're wondering whether or not it will in fact provide the boost of like and enjoyment and entertainment and love in your life. For us, it definitely does, and it's definitely worth it.
Julie Tabo, VOA News, Washington.
And that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. You'll be able to find updated world events and news 24 hours a day by pointing your web browser to voanews.com. Until next time. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great day.